It's Lake Effect on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich.
And I'm Bonnie North. An exhibit on through the summer at Jewish Museum Milwaukee shares the story of notable Jewish baseball players throughout the history of the sport, people like Sandy Koufax and Hank Greenberg. But it also more broadly covers pioneers from baseball's history as America's game changed to better reflect the America where it was played.
The exhibit also includes history from the Women's Professional Baseball League that featured teams across the upper Midwest in the middle of the 20th century. It's a story that historian Liz Metelsky will talk about in a lecture this Thursday morning called "There's No Crying in Baseball," a line taken from the film A League of Their Own. Metelsky told Lake Effect contributor Tyler Nelson that we know of the league now as the AAGPBL, but that was not always its name.
Actually, in its the league's history, it went through a number of names, but the kind of accepted name now is the AAGPBL because the players themselves chose that name in the,
sure.
in the 80s.
And it kind of started during the war, because the owners in Major League Baseball were worried that so many players are going to be drafted that they weren't going to have any fans in the stadium, so mm-hmm. they tried to find a softball league to
right. Well, and it's really the brainchild of Philip Wrigley, who was the principal owner of the Chicago Cubs. And even though President Franklin Delano Roosevelt had said baseball is going to continue, this is our national pastime, and even more so than ever because of the war, people are going to need recreation. People are going to need entertainment and something to take their minds off of the war. But despite his assurances that baseball would continue, the simple fact was men 18 and older were being drafted into the war. And Major League Baseball itself lost a number of star players.
I mean, could you imagine that if professional baseball players today joined the Army, you know, in times of need?
No, and it's amazing to think about. And even at World War II, I think that really is demonstrative of just how massive and how widespread this was, that it wasn't just professional athletes. This was star entertainers. These were movie stars at the height of their career that were volunteering, not just in selling war bonds, but, you know, bodily
yeah.
in
I mean,
harm's way.
Ted Williams was kind of a war hero, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, certainly.
The All-American Girls Professional Baseball League, they would send their the players through charm school, which I thought was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading into that a little bit. They had beauty standards for the girls to keep
yeah.
up with.
And that's one thing. One of the historical accuracies of A League of Their Own is that focus on that these women had to be not only professionals on the field, they had to be professionals off the field as well. And what that meant was that they had to have that kind of a unique balance of masculinity and skill on the field, but to still be women. And this was a big focus for Wrigley. He didn't want tomboys on his league. He wanted feminine women. And that's where the charm school really came. So after spring training, would be playing in the field and doing all their drills and things like that during spring training. And then in the evening, they were sent to Helen Rubinstein's charm school in Chicago, all of this is happening at Wrigley, where they would learn how mannerisms and appropriate application of makeup.
And moderate amounts of lipstick, you know, was
mm-hmm.
recommended. And for the eyes, they called it the windows to the soul. they would do eye exercises.
Yeah, and you get that sense in the film itself with the less feminine players. There's Marla Hooch, right? That they're like, and Marla Hooch, what a great player! And they never bring a close up on her.
Oh yeah, everyone kind of does like a pose, uh-huh. and she's just like, oh,
yeah, exactly. But I mean, that's certainly true to life. That was the big focus, and what's really important, I think, is that. There's actually a semi-professional softball league at the same time, and the women that played softball wore pants as uniforms. There was no charm school. There was no focus on these feminine accoutrements, and that's what sets the baseball league apart. And that's why it's a league of their own, is because they are playing this hybrid game of baseball and softball in skirts, and that's all very deliberate to make it acceptable for women to be playing a masculine sport.
Sure, and just reading about it, I didn't realize that it was basically just in the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was Rockford. The Rockford Peaches were obviously they're the star of
right.
a league of their
mm-hmm.
own, but I mean, we had the Milwaukee Chicks, and that was just one year, like you
right.
said, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they were one and done. They
Pretty
were
much.
Champions that season, and they were out.
Right. So the league starts 1943, very much an experiment. And the brainchild, again, is Philip Wrigley, and he had envisioned that originally this would be something across the nation, that when – and he wanted these women to be playing in the major leagues. They wanted to be playing at a Wrigley Field. So the idea was that the stadiums would be at capacity every single day, that when the men had an away game, the women would be playing there and vice versa. But none of the other league owners bought into that. So Wrigley said, well, that's okay. I've got enough money. I can do this thing on my own. So he starts off very modestly, four teams, Rockford, South Bend, Indiana, and Racine and Kenosha. And because of the league's success in 43, it then expands in 44 to Milwaukee and to Minneapolis.
And I mean, how popular did it end up becoming?
Well, it's one of the, I think, misnomers is that this thing was just a wartime phenomenon, that it was just for the duration of the war. But the league itself continues on until 1954 with teams in a dozen cities and in its peak years, probably drawing about 1 million fans a year to the sport. And it's more successful in the smaller Midwest cities like a Racine or Kenosha. And one of the reasons why it struggles in cities and one of the reasons why it only lasts 1 year in Milwaukee is because the city itself really is just too big. There's too many other things going on.
Sure.
Even in a baseball city like Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, to kind of compare that to nowadays, at Miller Park, it's a successful year if they have 3 million fans show up. So, I mean, to have 1 million people come to see how many, seven teams or so
mm-hmm.
in
I think it's pretty remarkable. It's one of the most unique chapters in the nation's sports history.
And I mean, what drew you to this? Like, where? What is your focus in history? You have your doctorate in history.
Mm-hmm. Right. My doctorate is in 19th and 20th century U.S. history, but my focus is really on women and gender, particularly in World War II and the years after post-war America. And I think what's so interesting about the time period itself is how in flux gender roles are because of the wartime emergency and men going abroad and women having to pick up the slack at home. And what that that does to America then in the 50s and the 60s, that things have changed and you can't really put everything back into their tidy boxes once they've been left out.
Yeah, I mean, that had to open the door for accepting women into the workplace. I mean, Rosie the Riveter, that wasn't a joke. You know, there mm-hmm. were women working in factories all over the country.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons why the league is so successful during World War II is because women are taking up what's seen as men's job elsewhere. So why not play baseball as well?
Not to keep referencing the movie, but I mean, A League of Their Own, everyone knows. Mm,
it's the touch point.
Everyone knows that. But is that based off of is there any realism to the people behind that, the main characters, was there?
Some of the characters actually were real people. Just off the top of my head, Faye Dancer, who is the Madonna character, is a real person, although I'm not quite sure about the characterization of her, if that's accurate or not. But most of the players are kind of composite players. And actually, it's kind of funny, all of the the kind of the basis of the primary research that I did for this discussion that I'll be doing were based off of oral histories. And one of the questions was always, how true to life was the movie? And for the most part, the uniforms, the idea about the chaperones and charm school, all of that true to life. But the biggest issue that most of the players had was in the characterization of Tom Hanks, his
sure.
character, the drunk manager who they were not a real savory character. And they really took kind of umbrage to that all of their managers were professionals. They were gentlemen. They never went into the women's locker room. They certainly never showed up to a game sauced. That was always the biggest issue they had with the film.
Yeah, what a great character that is, though. Mm. The reluctant, oh, mm-hmm. great, I'm coaching a bunch of girls.
Yeah. And all of the – I mean, that was part of the draw, too, was that Wrigley would pull these managers from the major leagues, from the annals of the sport. And Milwaukee's own coach, manager, was Max Carey, future Hall of Famer, played for the Dodgers, played for Pittsburgh Pirates. And he really incorporated his own playing style. He was known for being kind of a speedster on the bases. And because the Chicks played at Borchert Field, which is where the minor league Brewers played, you couldn't expect them to muscle a ball out of the park. where at in the smaller cities like Racine and Kenosha, they played in more augmented fields that were more suited to softball. So he instead had his players steal a whole lot of bases. And in the 115 games they played at Borchert Field, get this number, the Chicks stole 730 bases.
Wow.
In 115 games. Yeah. That was kind of their they were a tough group. They were kind of this nitty-gritty base-stealing team. One of the big questions that I had as I was doing this research was, why in the world did Milwaukee only have a team for 1 year?
Sure.
When the league was such a success elsewhere in smaller cities like Racine and Kenosha.
Racine and Kenosha get one and Milwaukee can keep it.
For the simple fact, too, that in 1944, the only year in their existence, they won the championship.
And you keep saying Chicks, but that was the team name.
That was the team name, yeah. And when I first, you know, I'm a huge baseball fan, and I love the movie A League of Their Own, and I hadn't known that Milwaukee had a team up until I was asked to do this project. And when I first heard that they had been named the Chicks, like my inner feminist is just, that's not right. But they're not actually named after kind of the pejorative term for women. They're named after chickens. A popular book at the time was called Mother Carey's Chickens. It's named into a movie. And the manager of the Chicks was Max Carey. So you've got Mother Carey's Chickens, Max Carey. So it becomes Carey's Chicks.
Well, that's a great story about the Chicks.
No, and I think it's important to know that it wasn't just this,
the peaches,
chicks.
The bells, mm-hmm. the Chicks. It's good to know the real story.
The real
behind
story
it.
Behind their chickens.
And the Blue Sox. I like the
Blue Sox.
The Southland
yeah.
Blue Sox.
You've got the Red Sox, the White Sox. Why not the Blue Sox?
A League of Their Own. It's important enough to be selected by the Library of Congress to be a part of the National Film Registry. Mm-hmm. But I was looking through the list this morning, and the Big Lebowski's on there, too. So I don't know
right,
how
so you're not
culturally
exactly.
significant that is you're, for you, America. But.
Exactly. I think that its biggest legacy is simply to highlight this thing that not very many people knew had ever existed. And after its run, certainly that's when places like Coopersville and even just locally now, the Milwaukee Brewers every year in their Hall of Fame, their Wall of Stars, will bring on a women's player onto that Wall of Fame every year from the Chicks.
Excellent. The Milwaukee Chicks.
Mm-hmm.
Living legacy. One season.
One
champions.
Season. One and done.
They're done. Well, Liz Metelsky, PhD. It was great speaking with you today.
Thanks so much, Tyler.
And I look forward to seeing your lecture on Thursday.
Sounds great.
Historian Liz Metelsky will talk about the history of the All-American Girls Professional Baseball League this Thursday morning at Jewish Museum Milwaukee. It's part of its exhibition, Chasing Dreams, Baseball and Becoming American. There is a link to more information at WUWM.com. ¶¶